Da. Hello, everybody. This is Richard Wynne-Jones and Roger Scully from the Wales Governance Centre at Cardiff University, and we're going to be looking back at the Welsh election, which is which was held a few days ago. Roger, how was it for you?
Tiring. the main thing. I've just about stopped yawning by now. But, interesting. Not necessarily in all the ways we might have expected, but I think there's plenty to review.
OK, and what's your kind of standout in terms of your takeaways, your kind of your one-sentence summary of the election?
Not a great deal of change at the top, more change at the bottom, I suppose, is what we see.
OK, well, shall we start at the top? Labour managing to lose one seat, but lose rather more votes than that.
Yes. The Labour Party... Their vote held up a little bit better than some of the polls were suggesting, but still, a fairly substantial loss of vote share from 2011, but a net loss of only one seat. And, had Plaid Cymru not managed their extraordinarily strong swing and capturing the Rhondda, actually Labour would have been left unchanged on seats.
Well, let's get this into perspective. In terms of losing the vote, as you say, it was a loss, but not quite as bad as some of the polls had suggested. Although I think we need to say that the poll on the day was very accurate and very well done. Congratulations to you and YouGov on that. But, how does this compare to Labour's results in previous Assembly elections?
Well, in terms of constituency vote share, this is Labour's second worst Assembly election ever. So, they did worse only in 2007 when the election took place against the background of, the last sort of few weeks of Tony Blair's period in office. The Labour Party generally across Britain, pretty unpopular. It's worse than they did under Alan Michael in 1999. It's worse than they did in 2003, worse than they did in 2011.
And the constituency share?
That's on the constituency share.
And then on
the regional list share, it's also, I'm just trying to do this from memory, it's the second worst performance ever as well.
But despite that, returning with 29 and a result which is, in a sense, understandably being interpreted as a bit of a personal victory for Carwyn Jones.
Yeah. Carwyn Jones was very much front and centre of this campaign. There was an emphasis from Labour the whole way along that this was a Welsh election. Jeremy Corbyn clearly had a very low profile. Carwyn Jones led the campaign, clearly in much more difficult political circumstances than 2011, when everything was running in Labour's favour. This time it was more difficult, yet Carwyn Jones, I suppose, has proved that he can win elections in both good circumstances and in bad ones. I think one thing we should say, though, about the Labour Party... This was, in some respects, rather similar, I think, their victory this year to the Conservative general election victory of last year, in that Labour did, just as the Conservatives did last year, extraordinarily well at getting the votes out where they needed them, losing votes where they could afford to lose them, but holding on to their votes everywhere they needed them, with the singular exception of the Rhondda. And after the general election last year, there were lots of commentary and even a couple of books sort of acclaiming the people who ran the Conservative campaign as sort of the greatest strategic geniuses since Hannibal. Well, if that was true of those people running the Conservative campaign last year, it must be equally true of the people running the Labour campaign this year. I mean, I think some of the stuff about the Tory campaign last year was overdone. I think it was a mixture of good planning, but also a certain degree of luck. And I think that's true of Labour this year as well. But certainly, I think a lot of kudos must go to those people who are managing the details of the campaign.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was quite noticeable that Carwyn Jones was. I mean, I seem to see him on Twitter in Llanelli every other day. They knew where they had to do the work and clearly had a very good local candidate and, put in national resources behind that campaign. And that, that was, as you say, very, very efficient in terms of transferring votes into seat, but also helped by the electoral system. There's no doubt at all that the electoral system, I mean, I think we've been using the adjective sticky in the context of the Welsh electoral system, and it proved very sticky indeed this time.
Yes, and what has been true after previous elections remains true after this election, that Labour dominate, particularly the constituency seats in South Wales, and as long as that remains true, Labour's dominance of National Assembly elections will remain in place. I mean, if we look particularly, say, at the South Wales West region, you know, the total number of victories by any party other than Labour in the constituency contests across all five Assembly elections thus far is zero. Labour have won every constituency in every election. You know, as long as they keep doing that, as long as they're also dominant in South Wales Central and South Wales East, you know, Labour will be much the largest party in the Assembly. There are no two ways about it.
So we are, you know, we are almost at a century of Labour hegemony in Wales, and absolutely no prospect of that changing as a result of this election.
Yes, I mean, this was the 37th victory for Labour out of the last 38 Wales-wide electoral contests. So, you know, Gordon Brown is the only man who's managed to lose Wales in the 2009 European election since, you know, Lloyd George's victory in the 1918 coupon election.
Yep. So, in a sense, if you are a Labour strategist, I don't know if they have strategists, but if you are a Labour strategist in Wales, you would walk away from this election feeling very satisfied, very happy, feeling that, you know, the long term prospects of your power, of your party being in power indefinitely are as strong now as they were on the Wednesday morning before the election.
Yeah, I mean, in potentially very challenging circumstances, I think you say job done.
Okay, let's start with then, let's move to the party that was the official opposition last time round, the Conservative Party. Overnight, I was rather critical of Andrew Arty Davis and very critical of their performance. I thought it was a very, very poor performance. They failed to win any of their targets. They simply lost all the momentum that they generated in the UK election in Wales last year. In places like the North East, okay, there were some improved performances, but they didn't actually, in the end, trouble the scorers.
Or get very close to it.
Absolutely. And in Andrew Arty Davis's personal kind of decision not to stand in the veil, they had, I'm sure, very able, but very, very young, rather low-profile candidate in the veil fall just short. Andrew Arty Davis then returned on the list. I mean, I was painting a very bleak picture of the performance. Is that one you share?
Broadly, yes. I mean, I think there's a couple of things here. First of all, you know, I mean, a lot of politics is about how you perform in relation to expectations, and I think the Conservatives made a major mistake in hyping up expectations so much, you know, particularly at their Welsh conference in the spring. If you looked at the details of how the electoral systems work, it was quite likely that the Conservatives would be potentially losing regional list seats to UKIP. And given the strength of UKIP, given the fact that the Conservatives had a second list seat in several regions, you know, a lot of those seats were clearly potentially vulnerable to UKIP. That being the case, it was always very possible that the Conservatives would see their position retreating, even if they had made, you know, at least some constituency gains. So I think there was a major mistake in overhyping expectations, even talking about the possibility of threatening Carwyn Jones in Bridgend, for instance, you know, a place the Conservatives haven't won since 1983. I mean, I think that was just silly. There's then, I suppose, you know, even if you take expectations out, a sort of more sober evaluation of performance and the reasons for it. You know, for the first time ever at Assembly election, the Conservatives have gone backwards. Yeah. They went back, you know, quite a lot, particularly on the regional list votes. As you say, they failed in their target seats in the way in which, you know, they succeeded last year. This year they fell short, and in nearly all cases actually quite a long way short. And I think you do have to question some aspects of, you know, the strategy and tactics around the campaign. You know, Andrew Arty Davis not leading from the front in terms of fighting a high-profile constituency.
I think in stark contrast to Leanne Wood, Kirsty Williams, and up in Scotland, Ruth Davidson, Willie Rennie.
I think that was almost certainly a mistake. I think also the Conservative campaign did not adjust very well to changing political circumstances, particularly the problems that the Conservative Party has had over the last 2 to 3 months across Britain. I mean, that's clearly hurt the party generally. But, you know, seeing their party election broadcasts quite late in the campaign, for instance, you're finishing off with fairly lengthy appeals from David Cameron. You know, I think David Cameron was probably an electoral asset even in Wales for the Conservatives last year, but all the polling evidence is that his ratings in Wales have taken a big hit in recent months, and yet he was the person you sort of ended your party election broadcast with a lengthy appeal from him. I mean, that I think was not very sensible.
But I wonder, Roger, if we need to put the Conservative results and indeed the response to it by the Welsh Conservatives in a broader context. I mean, one of the things which has been very interesting about the Conservatives in Wales is since 1999, since that first Assembly election debacle, mm-hmm. when they were led by Rod Richards and they ran a pretty much an anti-Devo campaign, we've seen, if you like, the Bourne Project, which is probably more accurately known as the Melding Project, which is to Welsh up or to Welshify the Conservative Party, to make them, you know, to try and shift the perceptions of the Conservative Party of Wales away from this traditional perception, right or wrong, that they are not somehow an authentically Welsh party, to try to change that perception, a generational project, if ever there was one, given their long, long-standing weakness in Wales. And so we saw that project being pursued pretty much consistently until fairly recently. And now I think we've seen, you know, some really interesting changes. We saw a group of Conservative MPs being elected last year from Wales, many of whom are deeply hostile to that Bourne project. I heard a senior Conservative the other day, who I won't name for obvious reasons, refer to the Davises, a group of Welsh MPs who have that surname, as the Taliban, the Conservative Taliban. In a sense, we have a group of people who are viewed as being deeply hostile to that project, Eurosceptic, suspicious of devolution. We now have an Assembly group who would, I'm sure, reject the accusation that they're kind of rowing back from that project. But the perception, I think, is different of them. And in a sense, are we seeing an unwinding of that project? In a sense, the Conservatives in danger of going back to, you know, to step one in terms of that journey? Because I don't think there is another project for them except to move on to that territory. It's the territory that Ruth Davidson is now trying to move on to belatedly for the Conservatives and did rather well, arguably, from that and other factors in Scotland. So is there some kind of wider context here in which we need to understand what's going on?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, there have remained divisions clearly in the Conservative Party, just as there are within the Labour Party, and those are to a fair extent personified by the differences between the sort of the Westminster contingents and the Assembly contingents. You know, the centre of sort of gravity in terms of opinion and the Westminster contingents for both the Conservatives and Labour is clearly in a somewhat different place on devolution from the centre of gravity of their Assembly contingents. I mean, I think with Andrew Arty Davis, I mean, you know, clearly he has a very different personal style to Nick Bourne, more sort of combative. And I think, you know, to some extent, I feel, well, if you elect somebody like that, you have to let them sort of be themselves.
Yeah.
I think there's also been a certain sense that, you know, they needed to be more oppositional in the Assembly rather than Nick Bourne's more obviously sort of consensual style. Yeah. And maybe time had moved on from that. But, you know, I mean, clearly to some extent it hasn't worked. I suppose the problem is now, well, where do they go? At the moment it looks as if Andrew Arty Davis is staying in post, not least because, you know, there's no obvious successor to him, but I mean, he clearly must emerge from this election as a somewhat diminished figure of, obviously, numerically at least, a diminished Assembly party.
Yeah.
So I think, you know,
and of course, now with a phalanx of UKIP members to their right, and indeed the abolish the Assembly party, if that continues to exist, floating and pops.
Which does pose a potential challenge to them from a different political direction.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, so we're pretty bleak about the Conservatives, I'm sorry. Let's move to Plaid Cymru. I mean, I think Plaid Cymru's performance is particularly interesting because one can generate two very, very different narratives. Yeah. One can generate a very, very positive narrative, which is based on this incredible result in the Rhondda, where Leanne Wood, there's no, you know, that's just stunning personal result there. You can then say, well, look, there was a big swing, big unexpected swing in Blaenau Gwent. There was a decent performance, very decent performance in Caerphilly, a very, very good performance in Cardiff West. You can point to seats where they, you know, and then I guess there's the one more heave approach. There's the, well, we've set the basis for the future here. We can finally challenge Labour in its heartlands. So there's a very positive spin on this. There's a much more negative spin, which says Rhondda is an extraordinary result. It's a personal vindication of Leanne Wood, no doubt, but there are very specific factors. Also very specific factors in Cardiff West, which is the other, I think, standout result. Mm-hmm. But elsewhere, you know, not getting Llanelli, falling short in Aberconwy, falling well short in Carmarthen West.
Yeah.
Actually, given the weakness of both Labour and the Conservatives, the divisions that we've already alluded to, Plaid Cymru should have been doing better. Now, I mean, how would you kind of call it in terms of these different interpretations?
I mean, I would mostly sort of fit between those. I think this was, you know, it was not a great election result for Plaid Cymru, but I think I would incline somewhat more to a sort of glass half full than glass half empty interpretation. And so I think we need to remember, you know, when Leanne Wood became leader of Plaid Cymru, she took over the party that suddenly electorally was in a pretty dreadful state. It had had an almost uninterrupted decade of electoral decline and failure. And you know, that is the background against which she assumed the leadership. And a whole series of appalling electoral performances. You know, the only real exception to that is 2007. But in some respects, I have long considered 2007, that year's Assembly election, as in some respects Plaid's worst failure of all, because there was an enormous gaping opportunity that was almost entirely missed. So basically, you know, frankly, under her predecessor, more than a decade of abject electoral failure. And that's the context in which she took over. Since then, well, I mean, you had the 2014 European elections. Plaid's vote share did go down, but they, against many expectations, including mine, did actually manage to hold on to their European seats. General election last year, they actually increased their vote share, not nearly as much as they would have liked, but, you know, the first advance for quite a few years. And this year, you know, advances on both votes in terms of vote share, you know, pretty good results in the PCC elections. I think, you know, this is clearly not the big step forward that Plaid Cymru would very much have liked. But I would tend to put at least a modestly positive interpretation on it, just in the sense that I think, you know, it certainly takes time to turn around failure. And frankly, for a decade and more, Plaid Cymru as an electoral project was a pretty abject and appalling failure.
What I find really interesting about that, Roger, is those target seats where Labour and Plaid are kind of mano a mano, kind of, you know, I mean, Rhondda, you take Rhondda out of the equation, because that wasn't a, you know, I mean, Leighton Andrews says he wasn't complacent. I'm sure that's right. But, you know, it wasn't a seat which many other people were taking much notice of. But Llanelli last year in Ynys Môn, seats which are kind of within reach, and Plaid Cymru can't seem to kind of get over the line. Is there something about the campaigning? Is there, you know, is there, can we say something about Plaid Cymru maybe as a campaigning machine? I mean, I take I take your glass half full argument, but presumably one of the important things now is how Plaid Cymru then respond to this. If they are complacent and say, well, one more heave, it's going to be okay, then, you know, this is going to be silly. If they learn some harsh lessons from their failures as well as enjoying their successes, maybe then it'll be more fruitful for them.
Yes, as I said, I would take a at least modestly glass half full interpretation, but only half full. And there are clearly things, if Plaid Cymru are ever to seriously attain their sort of political goals, there are a number of things they need to do. They first of all need to be able to drive their national vote share up. You know, they're still around the sort of 20-21% level. They were slightly higher in the PCC elections, and but basically, you know, Plaid need to be able to get up to around about 30% of the vote before they can start to make serious inroads. You know, no amount of clever targeting can really get you that much more while you're still on around 21%. And secondly, they need to work out how to be more effective in their key target seats. So last year, Ynys Môn, yes, they cut the Labour majority, came pretty close, but just missed out. Yeah. Ceredigion, big cut in the Lib Dem majority, but still fell actually some way short.
Yeah.
Llanelli was a place last year they thought was a target and had an appalling result, which of course meant they had very little platform for this year.
Yeah.
This year, Llanelli fallen short. Yeah. Carmarthen West and South Pembrokeshire have fallen a long way short.
Yeah. Aberconwy.
Good candidate, by many accounts, pretty good campaign, but still fell short. They need to, almost like a football team that keeps coming second or keeps just losing to extra time goals. They need to find a way to actually bring home the results in the key places. And why are they falling just short?
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily because of lack of effort, certainly on the part of the candidates. They need to find out why specifically they're not nailing it down in the key places.
Let's move on to UKIP. No seats in the previous assembly.
Yeah.
Seven seats in the... I think they're all still members of UKIP as we speak at the moment.
At the moment, yes.
But by the end of the podcast, perhaps, when we leave this room, maybe that will change. But, let's set aside what's happened since the election. Excellent result for them.
Yeah.
The polling, they underperformed slightly on their polling, but still by any standards, to go from zero to seven seats is a triumph for them.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I have, since election day, had to remind one or two journalists, well, they did actually come fourth. one or two overexcited journalists, particularly in London, seemed to be under the impression that UKIP won the election in Wales. they didn't do that, but it was still a significant achievement for them, not only to enter the Assembly for the first time, but to do so in significant numbers. There are, of course, big questions about what they do with that success now, but they won 13% or so of the list vote, just under 13% of the constituency vote. That's a major step forward, clearly, for the party, and follows on strong results in last year's general election, the 2014 European election. They're clearly arrived as a significant part of the Welsh party system.
Can we attribute their underperforming the polls to the fact that they ran a campaign which appeared to be shambolic? Or, is that so? Because obviously we had this extraordinary situation where their then leader, Mr. Gill, was suggesting that at least two of the leading candidates shouldn't really have been in such favourable positions to be elected as UKIP members. Mm-hmm. Could the underperformance that we... Because there's a sense that they're Teflon. It doesn't matter what happens, people will vote for them come what may. Is that your view, or do you think that they're...
I think we actually need to investigate precisely the reasons for their underperformance on the polls. And a little bit like in the general election last year, it could be that they didn't quite get their vote out on the day, or there was a swing against them at the last minute. Or it could be, as seems to have been the case with the general election polls getting things wrong, that in a sense the polls were slightly out the whole way along.
Right.
That we were overestimating UKIP support the whole way along by around 3 percentage points. And that actually needs some careful and detailed investigation. I suspect in the instance of UKIP, it may be a little bit of both factors, actually, that there was some weakness in their campaign, perhaps particularly their get out the vote operation on the day relative to other parties. And I suspect also that we may be in a situation whereby at least some of the online pollsters, including YouGov, who do all the Welsh polls, have been slightly overstating UKIP's support in Wales and indeed across Britain.
Okay, well, that's maybe a podcast for the nerds later on in the year. Let's turn to the Welsh Liberal Democrats, formerly dominant party in Wales, now reduced to one member. Stunning result for Kirsty Williams. One sensed the people of Brecon and Radnor maybe suffered a bit of buyer's remorse after their behaviour last year in ejecting Roger Williams, and a very, very resounding mandate for Kirsty Williams. You take that away from it and it looks very bleak indeed.
Yes, it's difficult to know quite what to say. Perhaps we just have a moment of silence almost for the Lib Dems. I mean, clearly Kirsty Williams herself had a tremendous result, but it was clear a long way before the election that the other four seats they held in the Assembly, all list seats, all won last time as the final list seat to be allocated in the region. So, they were all ultra marginal. And you know, you didn't need much of a slip in Lib Dem support at all for all of those to go. And they did, actually, all fairly clearly. And none of the Lib Dems were even actually that close to winning a list seat. Their vote held up in Cardiff Central, held up quite well in Ceredigion, reasonably well in Montgomeryshire. Most of the rest of Wales, their performance was abject. You're seeing, you know, quite decent, reasonable people getting utterly derisory vote totals. You know, quite a lot of their candidates, you know, fewer than 1,000 votes in the constituency contests. Yeah. And you know, there is really no way to put a positive interpretation on this.
They no longer really look like a national party. Well, that was the thing which struck me. They look like a four-constituency party, essentially.
Yes, and the really depressing thing for them from this, I think, is that all that has occurred, you know, their other dreadful recent results in recent years have occurred while they have had a very widely admired, dynamic Welsh Party leader in Kirsty Williams. And now she's gone.
Yeah.
So they've got to try and rebuild the party without the person who's been in Wales their single greatest electoral asset, and just about their only serious electoral asset.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Kirsty Williams' future career is going to be really important here. Even if she is no longer a leader, she will still be the most prominent figure. I doubt Mark Williams' profile is going to massively improve, and so Kirsty will remain, in a sense, vital to any prospects that they have.
Yes, I mean, I have to wait and see what she does. I mean, Mark Williams has now almost inherited the party leadership, and that's going to be very challenging for him. I mean, Mark has developed obviously a very strong profile in Ceredigion, very much as sort of the local hardworking constituency MP. Mm. I mean, he hasn't had particularly a role as sort of in terms of national leadership, and it's going to be extremely challenging for him to develop in that role. And I think it's extremely difficult for the party to launch any sort of comeback, you know, now that they are apparently without the person who has been pretty much their only remaining electoral asset in Wales in recent times. And I'm trying to think of a reason for saying why the future does not look completely grim for the Welsh Lib Dems, and I can't come up with one.
No, I mean, it's very, very, you know, they're effectively relaunching a party as a kind of progressive centre-left party, and there are plenty of others to go around. It's hard to see what the USP is. It's hard to know where you go from here.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's finish with two more parties. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to just briefly touch on the Green performance and maybe the Abolish the Assembly as the new kid on the block. The Green Party performance at the end of the day was pretty abject.
Yeah, pretty dreadful. I mean, they had a fair amount of profile, including in the two leaders' debates. I thought Alice Hooker-Stroud was an interesting, fresh new face, performed quite capably in those debates and in other media appearances. And they've completely failed to bring it home in terms of votes. I think part of this may be a reflection of broader UK trends. I mean, the one unambiguously positive contribution that Jeremy Corbyn has clearly made to the Labour Party in electoral terms as leader is that he has brought back into the Labour fold quite a number of people who drifted towards the Green Party before the last general election. A lot of that segment of the electorate have come back to Labour, and that has clearly hurt the Green Party right across Britain, including in Wales. But I mean, it really was an awful performance, and I think the Greens do need to think seriously now if they ever actually want to win seats in the National Assembly. They're going to have to think about some sort of arrangements with other parties. This deal possible with Plaid and maybe the Welsh Lib Dems was discussed before the election for the Greens, maybe also for the Welsh Lib Dems now. Maybe the only way back would be to get into those sorts of discussions.
Looking at the Greens, the kind of one more heave approach seems to be utterly futile in this case, not least because I suspect the media will feel absolutely entitled not to include them in any, not to give them the same kind of profile that Alice Hooker-Stroud eventually did enjoy.
At the moment, it would seem very unlikely that the Greens will have a place, for instance, in any Welsh leaders' debate before the next general election or the next Assembly election. Yeah. Why should they have,
absolutely,
frankly?
Absolutely. Just finally, the Abolish the Assembly party, a group of people, some of whom I'd come across actually, when in their kind of former UKIP guys. They're people who, I think in the main, were members of UKIP in Wales, mm-hmm. who decided to leave that party when UKIP decided to shift from being an anti-devolution party. That in itself mm-hmm. is an interesting story, I think largely driven by English factors and the fact that the UKIP needed to be more positive about an English parliament. But anyway, they were established fairly late in the day, and they did reasonably respectably, I would have thought.
Yeah, so they actually outpolled the Lib Dems on the regionalist vote in a couple of regions. We were starting to pick this up, actually, in their Welsh barometer polls. The final one for the election had them on 4%. Some people have speculated that they got a good regionalist vote because it was sort of mistaken or confused. UKIPers saw their name at the top of the ballot paper and just voted for them.
Yeah.
But actually, it was very much in line with what we were seeing already in the polls, and the UKIP performance was pretty consistent across the two ballots.
Yeah.
I think this does reinforce the point that there is a segment of the Welsh electorate who remain unreconciled to devolution. It is not as large a segment, I think, as some of those people believe.
Yeah.
It's more of the order of about 15% than 50%.
Yeah, well, yes.
But that remains a group of people who, you could well argue, will have every right to have their views represented. Absolutely. And I do wonder sometimes if, maybe pushed by for other factors, as you were saying, if you could have missed a bit of an electoral trick here. Because most of the people who did vote UKIP would be probably less than glowingly warm about devolution anyway, and if they're able to capture those people, people who vote for UKIP for other reasons, plus the diehard opponents of devolution, it's quite possible that a UKIP would have done even better.
That's a really interesting point, and I think you can argue that, of course, both ways. You can argue that UKIP had to respond and become more positive for strategic English reasons as well as Welsh reasons, and that is not it wouldn't be viable for UKIP as an electoral strategy. Mm-hmm. But certainly, that is a thought-provoking way to finish the podcast. So, thanks, Rog. Diolch yn fawr i ti.
Diolch.